The Money Show. Business Unusual with Colin Cullis.
The year, Colin, is 2056. You look remarkable, by the way, for your age. What's happening outside?
It's a great opportunity to look forward, and the basis for it is because the movie Blade Runner came out in 1982, and the opening sequence, the opening title says Los Angeles, November 2019, and so...
What? It's now?
It's now, yeah. So if you want to, you can ask people, when is the movie set? And if anybody says, well, it's set in the future, you can say, not anymore. And so I figured it's
quite spooky. What does Los Angeles 2019 look like in Blade Runner?
Terrible. It's horrible. It's overcast. It's, yeah, people don't seem to want to live in Los Angeles in 2019 as they anticipated in 1982. And maybe for context, because the opportunity is to look forward and see how good or bad we are at predicting the future. Whether or not we tend to see the future is typically getting better or worse. And then actually to think about what the future might be, not for the purpose of saying, see, I got it right, but if you don't like what you see the future potentially being, well, now is the chance, the absolute critical time we have to do something so you don't get there if it isn't something you want. So that's the plan. But it is my own sort of crystal ball gazing, so everything to be taken with a... Yeah, I'm not guessing I'm going to get a lot of this right, but hopefully inspired to think about it a little differently.
No one's going to remember, so you'll be fine.
Yeah, this is also true. Well, the internet, you know, it does have some problems with those things. But let me tell you what it was like in 1982. First of all, the cutting-edge technology that people were thinking, is this going to be the game-changer for the world, was the CD. At the time, the cassette ruled, vinyl LPs were the way you listen to music, and this newfangled CD thing, little disc that had digital stuff recorded onto it, was a big deal. The internet existed, but not the web. That was still a decade away. You could have a mobile phone, but you needed to either have it in a car or carry it around in a briefcase. It was definitely not the kind of things we take for granted now. And so it's into that world that the 1982 producers figured what would it be in 2019, and they had flying cars. The whole movie is based on the main character chasing down robots that were so human-like that they had to have special tests to determine which were real and weren't real. And in this particular kind of dystopian future, some of those robots were so good that they wanted to not comply with the humans' rules, which we, you can imagine, humans not the greatest things sometimes when it comes to these rules. Our plan was that any robots we created in this future, they would only be allowed to be alive for 4 years, and then we sort of got rid of them. And these six robots said, but we don't want to die. We want to stay living. That was it. That's all they wanted. And, well, the authorities said, no, we have to kill these robots. The BBC and courts have done a fantastic look back at specifically at the technology that they got right, which I've included online, things like home automation, mobile communications, video calling, big screen televisions. There's enormous displays. They got all of that absolutely right, which again in 1982 was remarkable. But then they had people sitting at bus stops reading newspapers. That's maybe still around, but definitely not as big a deal. People were smoking like chimneys. And as I say, flying cars and all the rest of it. Possibly the hat tip as well to say that the environment, there was been a major environmental catastrophe. And, you know, it was a lot of trouble with that. And in that respect, I guess, even in 1982, Mr. US President, we'd realized that the humans were having mostly negative impact on the world. And again, just for context, to see what do we think of when we look into the future, I asked the head of the show if people thought the future would be way better, a little better, not so good, or pity the children. And I'm disappointed to have to say that 55 votes had 40% of the people say pity the children. So
really?
Yeah, people aren't looking too optimistic.
I mean, again, I wonder whether, I mean, 1982, what was happening in the world? Ronald Reagan was in the White House. The world, yeah, there was stuff happening in the Middle East, but the world was fairly stable. I mean, if you'd asked people in the 1960s what the world was going to look like, I mean, the threat of nuclear war was far more imminent then than at any other time, I suspect, the 70s and oil crises. I mean, generally, human beings see the future better. Again, Twitter is a funny echo chamber. I wouldn't take it too seriously. You don't need to be too despondent.
Exactly. And invariably, it's a bit of both. And again, the point is how we look at it. So one of the areas where I suppose we could kick off with, the movie was based on robots. Do we have robots? Yes. I'm going to break them down into four kinds of robots, though. The first two, I don't think will be too surprising. They'll just get a whole lot better than they are now. The sort of factory robot idea, the one that's involved in manufacturing or warehouse and moving things around, they're getting more intelligent. They're getting more sophisticated. They're going to help us not have to do jobs we don't want to do. I don't think anybody would argue with that. The second one would be the sort of virtual assistants. And again, they're becoming very, very popular. You are as likely now to start asking for directions or relying on these things for doing work for us. And if you give us another 37 years, given the first virtual assistants are less than a decade old, you can imagine they're going to become very accomplished in that time. The next two become a little more sort of, do we really want that or how will it work? So the first group are the sort of nanny and nurse bots, which as the population ages, we're going to need to simply give people who are, they're still independent, but they a little less firm on their feet, something to assist them. So it doesn't have to be an actual sort of robot that works with you. It could be sort of a smart wheelchair or walker, could be kind of an exoskeleton, or simply sort of a wearable monitor checking vital signs and be able to call for assistance in case you need it. That's not too bad. And the nanny bot similarly, but for the young. Potentially, if you are living longer, you're probably delayed starting a family. And on that basis, then, you know, you're still kind of busy. And again, the nanny bot is not going to replace a parent. It'll just be something to keep an eye on the kids.
You say that now. Parents are going to say, nanny bot, take care of kids. Kids, that's your mother. Cheers, we're out of here. And they're going to go drooling. I suspect that's what's going to happen.
Maybe that is the case, but I think, you know, we're social animals at heart. And so the bonding that happens with parents and children, and a big chunk of why people have kids in the first place, is really quite fulfilling for them. Although I was kind of concerned to read more research in the week that says kids make parents happy, but only when they leave home. I did think that was the nastiest thing in the title.
That is terrible.
Children, yeah. If you're listening to this at home, it's not true.
The final of those four bots, that one maybe some people would say they're not ready for that sort of one. And these will be the sort of companion bots. That's not to say that they aren't things or we don't already start having relationships with our machinery, possibly ones that aren't maybe the most healthy. There is a guy in Japan, which maybe doesn't seem surprising, who actually wanted to formalize his relationship with, it's kind of a virtual anime type character, but there was a physical representation of it. I suspect robots, sex dolls for want of a better word, physical relationships with these kinds of robots will be a thing. One of the actual replicants in Blade Runner was a robot created for that purpose. But there's going to be some societal questions and debates had about it. And I suppose every generation has had some or other major cultural shift or thing has had to deal with, from women's suffrage to reproductive rights to same-sex marriages. Potentially the next one would be humans, machines are a thing, and I'm pretty sure that's going to be quite tough for people to have to manage, though.
I mean, what happens to things like, I don't know, something that's fairly new, like plastics, for example? Plastics sort of come into the world after World War II, and they're oil-based, and so we're causing enormous environmental damage now as a result of so much plastic clogging up practically everything. I mean, are plastics part of our Blade Runner future of 2056?
I'm going to take the high road and say yes, because they are so versatile, they are so cheap, they are so fantastic at being molded and used, and they have longevity, and that's part of the problem. But I suspect we will be able to get a lot more conscious about the need to recycle them. And the big thing is that most of them, all of them, come from oil at the moment. So that's still the issue with fossil fuels. However, there is some pretty good research happening that allows you to basically take wood pulp, refine it, do some stuff, and you can create oil. I mean, oil is effectively really old trees and plants anyway, but now they can do it from the stuff that was just recently used. So being able to create plastics from recently cut down trees and keep the cycle going, not adding any of the CO2, would suggest that plastics in a form that we don't quite know it, but very similar to the ones we've got now, will remain a thing. And in 2056, plastic whatever utensils and things will still be a very big deal. And the other element to mention about plastic specifically would also go, or dovetails into transport, because I suspect that rather than us having flying cars and autonomous vehicles and drones and all these smart transport things, space travel even, is that we'll simply travel less. One, we can sort of telecommute. And two, we won't have to have as many things shipped everywhere, because manufacturing plants and farms won't have to be so far away from the centers where people are. These big vertical farms will keep the food a lot closer to where major urban populations are. And sort of mass 3D printing will allow most things that you need to be created on demand and only when you need it, using probably some form of plasticky type thing.
You see, that's a positive for the future. It really is. But we're already seeing something. And again, a lot of these movies talk about the destruction of society and politics dies and all that sort of stuff. I wonder if we're not in the early stages of that already, when we look at the allegations that are made against the likes of Facebook and the manipulation of elections, and we look at how people are manipulated when it comes to voting and voting patterns, and what AI can tell us about what we think before we think it. All of these things play out in this sort of environment, don't they?
Yeah, politics and government is a really interesting one, because 37 years seems like a long time, but for the pace that governments move, it's not that long. I think it's possibly fair to say, certainly from a technological kind of point of view, governments tend to move slow and break things rather than any of the other versions that they give. But they are speeding up, and some countries, like Estonia, for example, that have said, let's shift a lot more of services into an online realm. Let's give people access to it. Let's stop making politicians responsible for the day-to-day running of society and hand it to civil servants and bureaucrats to take care of it, and you know, the bureaucracies, etc., can be automated or sent online. So I can see there's going to be a good shift for a lot more stuff that we need to interact with governments, municipalities, etc., that can be handled by much lower level, much more direct access stuff. You would still need diplomacy, negotiations about trade and security and those sorts of things, but it'll be a much smaller government. And when it comes to making policies, perhaps it'll kind of work on a project basis, so people get co-opted into government for the sake of putting together a policy on some or other thing. So right now, having aging senators, I'm just using the US as an example, aging senators try and quiz Facebook about their business model, probably not going to work out so well. Just get the kind of people already in the industry, advise on the best practices, and then take it forward. And I wonder if the incredible version of an election won't be us doing these sort of popularity contests, which they've kind of become these days, but rather you would specify what sort of things you'd like to see your neighborhood, your sort of broader area, your country invested in. So you'd say, I'd like to optimize for growth, and I prioritize healthcare and, let's say, education. And then the candidates will sort of be ranked against that, and there's a scorecard given against it. And so your vote basically is allocated against the candidates who best perform at the metrics you set them. And because humans in society will have different priorities, the mix of priorities as viewed by all of us together will get sort of a mix of politicians or representatives.
Hey, isn't that ideal?
It would be wonderful, right? Because then it's not just like who could make the loudest noises and try and con us with their sort of emotional pleas.
That's if we haven't all fried to a crisp by then, of course, because, I mean, one's just got to look at Graaf Reinet. There was there's so many stories around Graaf Reinet and the drought in Graaf Reinet, and the fact that gifted the givers are keeping the town going by giving small allocations of water to people on a daily basis because the town water supply has dried up completely. They've had their day zero. And you go, if Graaf Reinet is a microcosm of the future, then Mad Max and, you know, every other movie be damned. I mean, this is very, very serious. Blade Runner, you know, is 10 degrees hotter than we ever imagined possible in 1982.
This is the second scariest one of the environments, or equally scariest one, because, yes, our ability to contend with the amount of environmental damage that has already been sort of set in motion might prove to be just so difficult with the time we have left and the cost that might be involved in doing it. I am still optimistic, though, that there is sufficient research and there are sufficient opportunities that, again, now we just need those sort of top-level decision-makers to commit to say, look, it is going to be painful. It is going to cost us a lot of money. But on the other side of it is a sustainable future. And I think there's that joke that somebody says, you know, how embarrassed will we be if we turn out to spend all this money and save the environment and it turns out we didn't need to? And it's like, well, you saved the environment. Even if you succeed and you didn't need it to, the outcome is good. The notion ahead of Y2K of saying, let's just give it a go and hope for the best, would not have been as good if we said, listen, we got really nervous about it. We did everything we needed to do and then nothing happened. Well, that was awesome. That was exactly the outcome we wanted. But we don't seem to have just enough of that sort of attitude just yet to ensure we can get there.